Captain's log, stardate 3172.5. We have reports of an intruder materializing on one of the decks. Myself, Mr. Spock, and Dr. McCoy, plus a team of security, are going down to corner the strange intruder. We get there and we see a mysterious blue box in the corner of the room. A door opens and a strangely garbed intruder steps out and says,
"Would you like a jelly, baby?"
Welcome, 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 dear listeners, one and all, to this, the latest in our long line of Staggering Stories podcast. I'm Crumbly.
I'm Astaman.
I'm Adam.
I'm Jean.
And I, yes, I am
full of sound effects.
Well, merely Keith at the moment, because fake Keith isn't here.
And wind, yes.
Wind.
Yeah. We don't go there.
Hanging around cliffs, have you? Gathering that wind.
Wearing my big coat.
Fuddling up.
Looking dramatic.
Staring into the middle distance.
Yes.
Anyway, without further ado, strange intruders on the Enterprise besides, it's the news with El Presidente.
Woo! Muppet news.
Oh, hey, Muppet news.
That's right, it's the 50th anniversary special. It's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights. It's time to celebrate 50 years of the Muppet Show tonight. Well, not quite tonight. Actually, it's next year. The first episode went out in Britain, for it was a British show, on the 5th of September, 1976.
Before I was born.
By Mr. Grade.
One-off special episode, apparently harking back to the original series, will be produced for the anniversary by Seth Rogen and Sabrina Carpenter. The hope is that sufficient interest will be created for a full series, but Disney's ownership of the Muppets hasn't seen the greatest of successes so far.
No. I quite enjoyed the first film they did. The second one, not so good, but... Yeah. We shall see.
Have to wait and see, considering what has happened to Disney lately.
Well, yes.
We'll come back to that in addendums.
Oh, OK.
Tomb Raider! Lara Croft TV series coming. Talking of reboots, Amazon are in the process of creating a Lara Croft Tomb Raider streaming TV series. Phoebe Waller-Bridge will wear many hats, creator, writer, executive producer, and co-showrunner. Fake Ginger and Game of Thrones survivor, Sophia Turner, has been cast as the gun-happy explorer, Lara Croft. Waller-Bridge said,
"I'm so excited to announce the formidable Sophie Turner as our Lara, alongside this phenomenal creative team. Everyone on board is wildly passionate about Lara, and are all as outrageous, brave, and hilarious as she is. Get your artifacts out. Croft is coming."
Production will begin in January for a currently unknown number of episodes or release date.
Yeah. Is this the first TV series?
I think it
is. Kind of. There's been an animated TV series, I think. But first live action.
Okay.
So there've been, three live action films?
Yep. Yeah.
The last one was only a few years ago. Wasn't that many years ago. Just before the pandemic, maybe? Yeah. Around that time.
In the earth that was.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Foundation.
Ooh.
Fourth season coming.
Ooh.
Also beginning production in early 2026 is the fourth season for Apple TV's adaptation of Isaac Asimov's Foundation. It is expected that this new season will continue to tackle events in the third book of the series, Second Foundation.
That's confusing.
Though the series has already taken significant liberties when translating the multi-century storyline epic already. Original showrunner David S. Goyer has departed the series after reported disagreements with Apple. His original 8-season arc may well be reworked by her newbies Ian Goldberg and David Cobb, as perhaps the most ambitious sci-fi TV series of all time, at least in terms of narrative scope. It will be interesting to see what happens with it.
We don't get Apple TV, so I haven't seen any.
Neither have I. I've got the novels of the Foundation plus all the sequels.
Yeah, there are what, 8, I think, novels in all that he did, is that right?
Oh, blimey. Yes, the original Foundation trilogy, Foundation Earth, Foundation's Edge, and a few others. Yeah. Yeah,
they did 2 prequels as well, which is set before the original novels.
Forward the Foundation, and there's another one which temporarily eludes me.
Yeah. So a lot of stuff there. I've seen about the first half of the first season. I really struggled with it. But I hear great things, so I really must give it another go. Mm. Next time I've got Apple, which will be shortly, I think. Because Slow Horses is coming back, isn't it, shortly?
I think so. Yeah.
Well, as the original Foundation series takes place over, what is it, 1,000 years or something,
yeah, something like that?
Wow. Yeah. It does sound good. I would like to see it because it's Isaac Asimov to have a whole series of his work.
Yeah, and it's truly epic scale. Yeah, clever stuff.
Any addendums?
Any addendums?
I have an addendum.
What is your addendum, Scott?
Well, I've been told by someone at work, and we've now confirmed that Karen Gillan is returning to BBC Three. In Doctor Who reruns. Matt Smith.
Okay.
Yes, so starting Saturday the 27th of September, which will be after this episode goes out. No, before this episode goes out. Yeah.
Day before.
So, yes, you'll be able to rewatch all of those really good episodes. The start of Stephen Moffat and the whole sort of fairy tale arc.
Yes, series 5.
Yeah.
My favourite.
Wondering why they're rerunning the Matt Smith era. No disrespect to Matt Smith, but why they're running it from that point and not doing it from
the beginning.
The beginning of the reboot.
Yeah. Well, it's HD for one thing.
Yeah. That's what the only reason I can think of, because it's HD, and we've got some RTD stuff going on at the moment, potentially more of it with Doctor
Maybe.
Who.
We'll see. Yeah, that's really good news. So they're doing the first 2 episodes on the 27th, and then weekly after that for the rest
of
that season.
That's what it sounds like, yes.
Yeah. Well, not that we haven't all got them on DVD or Blu-ray.
Not seen them to death or anything.
Whack them on any time you like, but that's not the point.
No.
The point is we've been on those TARDIS sets.
Yes, we have.
Any more addendums?
As was mentioned in the actual news, apparently Disney has taken a horrific whack on their stock because of things that have happened with their associated TV networks.
Oh, really?
As in cancelling certain comedians' shows.
I only heard vaguely about this,
Yes.
I'm not sure by how much, but I think it was a couple of million. Their stocks fell. Plus,
more than a couple of million.
Yeah. I think it was 3.87 at the last count.
And quite a few people have cancelled their subscription. Now, the interesting thing about subscription cancellation, you have various categories. Why have you cancelled
this? Oh, it does ask you, yeah.
Well, why have you cancelled this subscription? You can't afford it anymore.
Other.
There's not anything on that you want to watch. Yeah. And there's other. And one wondering how many times other has been filled
recently. Yes, you can generally write in why.
Yep, you can.
Specifically and accurately why you're cancelling.
Must say, I've never really watched the American
Neither have I, personally.
I've seen a few of them.
That is not the point. There is something called free speech.
Well, indeed, yes.
They have it in their constitution. Yeah, we actually aren't even protected under free speech.
We have freedom of expression.
We have freedom of expression, which is totally different.
There is I think there was a meme on Facebook. It's a wonderful meme. Countries where you cannot criticise your government, which is North Korea, Russia, China, and now America has been added to that list.
Apparently. They're a bit like the old Terry Wogan and that chat shows, but they're done behind a desk.
I've seen clips.
Satire and a bit of digging at governments.
A little spiel where the host talks directly to the camera.
Yeah.
No guests.
So they interview guests and then they make commentary about what's going on. A bit like Spitting Image, make commentary about the existing government. Yeah. They make commentary about the
existing government. Who would want to cancel Terry Wogan?
Did you ever see him in those moleskin trousers? Fine! Figure of a man.
Yeah, well, interesting what happens. But,
Here endeth.
I have one final addendum. Stan Lee.
Dead.
Alive.
What?
Sort of.
Resurrected?
Well, Stanley.
Did they put him back?
Stanley has been dead for about a decade, about 2018.
Is it so really that long?
Yeah. It was 2018. But at the latest, or the next Los Angeles Comic Con, which at the moment is next week.
Presumably the weekend this goes out.
Yeah. You can have a one-to-one experience with Stan Lee and in-depth conversation where he answers questions. No, they are producing a hologram. Stan Lee.
Halloween related. Not Halloween related.
And I'm not comfortable with this myself because, it's how much...
That's a bit strange.
How much input and direction has this come from the man himself?
Yeah.
I know it's been certain long, but how much information was left in his will? How much would he be happy with this?
This isn't the Avatars where they actually put ping pong balls on themselves and their cameras this in their faces and knew what they were doing.
This is an AI recreated hologram. So you're not having conversations with him. You're having conversations with an AI simulacrum of him.
That sounds and looks like him.
It sounds and looks and possibly could be answering the questions the way he would answer them, or possibly not.
Well, yes.
And also, who's this going to? The Stan Lee experience is going to be between $15 and $20.
Wow. Can't be a cheap thing to have made.
No, it can't be a cheap thing to have made, but considering what happened to him later in, towards the end of his life, the amount of people walked in there and attempted to rip him off and make money off of him.
Yeah, that is
sounds
the
like
question.
It's still going on.
How much will go to his estate?
Yeah, this
and
is
how
what's
much will lie in the pockets of various
this
people.
Is what's leaving a bad taste in my mouth. Mm. There was some of the stories that had come out is that people drew a couple of litres of his blood to use to be signed on the comics to be sold in his name, but not actually the money going to him.
That's very Halloween, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes, yeah. So I am not, I am really not sure about this.
I prefer that sort of thing for maybe museums to present famous historical figures rather than...
Well, this is it. It's the amount of input the actual people have. For example, Abba Voyage.
Yes.
That is done with their full cooperation, their full knowledge, their full understanding, and they know where all the money's going.
Yes.
If they did the same thing for David Bowie or Elvis...
Yeah.
That
I'm sure they have done it for Elvis. But yeah.
Actually, no, they haven't.
Really?
Yeah. It puts it on a different level.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, you can't do it for Elvis in the same way you do for Abba because you can't actually capture the body movements of a dead person.
Well, this is what they have because this is what they've done with Stan Lee.
Yeah, but it's not an accurate copy in the way that, you know, how they hold and their face and that
also,
kind of stuff.
Also, there's a few reports here on a couple of people who have seen it. Mm-hmm. Now, as I said, the best comparison we got is Abba Voyage, which is shown in a purposely built auditorium, which is in darkness with light effects and whatever. So you can't actually get all that close.
No.
Whereas this Stan Lee is done in bright light and it doesn't look apparently all that kosher.
No, I'm sure not. You talk about holograms, but you can't actually make true holograms.
No, it's reflected against a light, not a light, glass. A glass.
Yeah.
A glass freezer, a glass door.
I think the Avatars are the closest we've got to true holograms at the moment. Yeah. They are three-dimensional. Having now
really
seen them reflected in a mirror.
They give the impression.
They give the impression. So, if you were to stand to the side, you would see it.
You have to be in the right position.
And I've seen it on the thing, but they're the closest we've got at the moment to giving that impression, and that needs a really controlled environment to do it.
Yeah. Whereas Stan Lee's more in vain with sort of Liam Neeson in War of the Worlds.
Yes. Yeah, that's what came to my mind.
Which is very well done.
It's very well done, but again, that is another controlled environment, darkened and the lights deflected. Where this one will be in convention auditorium.
Yeah.
Like I did with Matt Smith in that live thing, where they had basically a box with screens on each side of the box. So you see him at the front from one side, you see a side view of him on the other side of the box. But if you look at an angle, you just see his front and side separately.
But once again, it's in another darkened, controlled area, not a brightly lit auditorium.
Yeah. I think the thing with me for it is more the fact that Liam Neeson Matt Smith were consciously involved in the project.
They shot live action.
There's a degree of separation of time. If they had George Washington in a museum reading the fourscore years and what have you as a hologram, you kind of accept that. But when it's someone that's not that deceased and you're being used as a monetary thing, it's that difference between having a hologram that's there for information and someone else making money off of someone else's. Yeah.
I wonder if they're going to invite the family
to
meet their hologram.
Oh, dear.
Well, does the family have any input?
Or whether they'll veto it.
It's a bit like me chickening out, showing the head of Pertwee to Sean at the convention.
It is using that likeness for profit, and I think it gets into grey areas
this is where it
who owns the likeness of someone.
Yeah.
Any more news?
No, I'm addendum doubt.
That's the end of the news.
Dear listeners, we've all been watching me as a younger man, and incidentally, Captain Christopher Pike as well. We've been watching Star Trek Strange New Worlds.
So this is the second half of the third season. So we've been watching...
The bigger half.
The bigger half.
The bigger half.
So I'll run through them quickly. We've been watching episode 5, Through the Lens of Time.
Yep.
Episode 6, Thou Shehal.
The Sealat.
The Sealat who ate its tail. Episode 7, What is Starfleet? Mm. Episode 8, 4.5 Vulcans. 9, Terrarium. And 10, New Life. And new civilizations.
Well, first one, Through the Lens of Time. This strolled into something that has usually been Doctor Who's own territory.
You described it as being rather Cthulian.
Yeah, this is it. What I say, it's more like Mysterious Planet, and not Mysterious Planet, the one with the devil and the human.
Yes.
The Impossible Planet. Thank you,
the Impossible Planet. It's a evil from the dawn of time.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Takes over a member of the crew.
Yes,
one of the medical staff.
Yes.
Featured in the last couple of episodes.
Dana Gamble. He was introduced right at the beginning of the season and has occasionally popped up.
Mm. Yep.
And I think we did mention the last time is he's sort of got an hourglass above him counting down the amount of times. There was a guess that he's been introduced to kill him off. And the payoff does sort of come in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
This is quite an interesting one. Although there's been, you've got the Gorn arc on this.
Yeah.
This gives a new arc to the second half of this season to an extent.
Yes.
Mm,
yeah,
because does the Gorn carry over from series 2?
Gorn carries over and does pop up occasionally later in this season.
Yeah. In brief
appearances. See, first of all, the first half of the season looks more like it's all Gorn fallout, And then halfway through, you suddenly get this new... You can tell at the end of this episode it's going somewhere.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because so many of them have got flashbacks and all sorts of weird things about effectively a prison. It's like Prisoner Zero to some extent.
It's a multi-dimensional prison.
A multi-dimensional prison, and they accidentally let one of the prisoners out. mm-hmm.
I did like the effect of him being possessed, gouging the eyes out.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Blackened eyes.
Yeah. And the fact that even though he doesn't know it, he's a walking, talking corpse. Pretty much.
Apparently, apparently he was brain dead. So.
Yeah.
But still functioning fine.
Still functioning,
Some people it doesn't affect them when they're brain dead.
Or being possessed.
And so what are you trying to imply? But there is...
Thinking some world leaders are asleep.
I'll have to... No, we're not getting political.
I quite enjoyed this episode. I like the set.
Oh, yeah.
I like the set and the idea and the plane. And I think because it's not a timey-wimey one, it's a spacey-wacey one. Deals with different dimensions.
It is... To my mind, it is timey-wimey and spacey-wacey.
Yeah.
because it's always the same area, the same little section, but it seems to be in different slices of time. Because they go through one door and it's exactly the same, but there's certain things missing and it's just earlier.
One of them's in that room and the other one's in the other version of that room.
That is also very Doctor Who, isn't it?
They just change something by
putting a vase or changing a sign on the wall.
They're in the same space, but not the same time.
And it did feel like, hey, we've now got the volume. So all the central bit is just the set. All the walls are obviously LED projected.
The walls or the surrounding plinths or surrounding platforms
go off into infinity.
And they're also moving.
Yes.
Just slightly sway. What's the line from Hitchhikers? It's strange the way the sea stays rock set, Eddie. But the buildings are washing up and down.
Backwards and forth.
Our erstwhile ensign, nurse, this is his first mission, gets possessed by something called the Vizda, to which the native doesn't like at all and immediately tries to run out.
And dies.
He gets zapped because the only way they can pass through...
Two by two.
Yes.
Not in this one. The only way they can pass through in the first section is if Nurse Chapel goes first, because she was the one who they took
it's
the blood sample.
DNA entry door system, so you need the person whose DNA is to get in and to get out again. If they're not with you, it's based on the basis you must be an escape prisoner, Zach.
And also in this episode, they introduce a theme that becomes more prevalent later on, if it's sort of effect preceding calls.
Like I said, time is slightly out of whack.
Just a tad.
At the end of this, our ensign's died, our doctor's died, or the nurse, whatever he is. Everyone's a little bit upset, but nothing more. It's all done and dusted. We move on.
Except there was that great showdown between Gamble, Battelle.
The Gamble, the fact that Gamble's possessed triggers something in Battelle. Because she goes completely...
They're conversing in the same language.
They seem to be conversing in the same language and attempting to beat each other up.
Yes.
Must have been thrown around the sick bay. A lot of fights happen in the sick bay.
There are a lot of fights,
No one can be sick then. But at least they're in the right place when they're injured.
Yeah, exactly.
It's about this point that all the previously on Star Trek gets longer and longer. And there's episodes that were in previous... feels like previous series, which I haven't seen. But obviously there's lots of things building up to get to the end of the season.
We're going to have our cheese ball party. You're going to have to come round.
Yes.
Take probably about 2 days to watch it all by this point.
I've got two packets of cheese balls. I can do it.
Two complete days, not two evenings.
We then move to First Officer James T. Kirk.
Yes.
Getting his first taste in the captain's chair and realising... His ego is bigger than his skills at this stage.
But not as big as his tummy.
Yeah, I did like it. It's the fact that we also get introduced to, I can't remember her name, but the captain of the Farragut. It's the first time we've seen the captain.
Oh, she's a Vulcan captain.
She's a Vulcan. Who, how can I put it? Kirk is chafing at the bit with. Because he's, they're there to scan this planet and he recommends that they beam down and do a proper one-to-one scan and get out there and get involved
with
the environment.
Boots on the ground.
She's exercising caution.
Yes.
Which is just as well because the moment he goes, a big nasty thing comes and eats the planet and then tries to eat the Enterprise.
A big scavenger ship.
The first thing that went through my head was a slight low-grade version of the Doomsday weapon.
Because
it was more cartoony because it had eyes and teeth and
tentacles.
Created by a race of beings who are living in it.
Yes.
You find out at the end who they are.
For all the fact that this one was kind of like, suspense, the Farragut's going to get eaten and the Enterprise is going to get eaten and our heroes who we know aren't going to get eaten because we see them in. And in amongst that, they lose comms. So how do we coordinate? Someone had experience of a wide communication system back in the... Where the hell has she got a set of telephones?
It just seems like Pelly is a bit of a... Well, she's a bit of a magpie sort of collection.
No disrespect, but this links back into time and time and time and time again, where you saw her in present-day Earth with a warehouse full of stuff that she's Yeah. Borrowed, acquired,
yeah. Been gifted.
Been gifted. Because this is the first time we get a shot of Pelia's cabin as she's rummaging through. And yeah, it's exactly as I would imagine it. Most of the cabins you see are Star Trek, white walled,
pristine.
Yeah. But she's got leather chairs in there, carpets on the wall, and
it's like a tapestries. Antique shop.
Yes,
isn't it?
Yeah.
A junk shop. Huh?
Yeah,
I was waiting for the moment she produced a Bakelite phone, but it didn't come. Yeah.
Well, at least the phones they came up with, they weren't the old hold one bit up to your ear and talking to them. But yeah, I quite liked that they had to actually lay out cables and use telephones.
Yeah, and when someone went quiet, they didn't realise they were running off down the corridor to do something.
Hello?
Yeah.
I think this also nicely, neatly locks into something I was saying about the last time we did this. It was back, it was over 50 years ago. William Shatner was the star, so he was the first one to come up with the ideas. He was the last one to fall unconscious. He was the first one to wake up from unconscious. Yeah. But it links into that is when he takes charge, the people who are with him, who are Uhura, Ortega, and Spock, if I remember rightly.
Spock, Chapel, Scotty, and Uhura.
Yeah, are operating as they would with Pike, i.e. suggesting ideas and offering alternatives, which just overloads him.
Yeah.
He's got to wander why off and do something else to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, so let's go to him and tell him, you've got to get a grip.
Yeah.
Get a grip, Jim.
It's not his command style.
You see the formation of what you're going to see as...
Yeah.
Captain Kirk.
Yeah.
It's there, but it's an uncertainty. So, what he wanted, and then suddenly realising... What you want is more hard work and responsibility than you thought it was.
Well, he was there with the first officer, captain. The captain's the safety net. He was this is the first time he's operated without the safety net.
There's a really nice moment here. I think this is episode between him and Scotty.
Yeah, yes.
James T. Kirk and Scotty. Yeah. You properly see them really get to know each other.
The connection that we get later on.
There's a couple of bits, and we'll cover one later on, where... You start to see how the friendships are established, that when we drop into USS Enterprise later on, why they're such a well-oiled working team and seem to have history there.
And presumably why Pike recommends Kirk to take over.
Because
he knows the crew so well by that point. Because he's there every other episode.
there's a pocketbook mock-up I've seen of Anson Mount, Wesley, I can't remember his name, Kirk. Yeah. And the title of the book is, Why the Hell Are You Always Aboard My Ship?
Yeah.
But of course, this one, Enterprise comes and helps.
Yes.
Yep.
They escape and they blow up
the
planet-eating...
The scavenger ship.
Yeah. And the crew of the planet-eating scavenger ship, all in their...
Big space environmental.
Bulky spaceships. Yeah.
End up into... And they do a life science check. They're all human.
Aye.
All 6,000 of them.
Mm. 6,000 of them.
All dead by the end.
And it turns... It's a bit of a nod back to Vega.
Yes. Yeah. Descendants of 21st century scientists... who left Earth in the aftermath of World War III.
Whenever that is.
Who Pellel had to explain to everyone who they all were because she remembers this being lost.
That's what, she was there as well. There was a lot of that in this season, wasn't there? Yeah. It was quite good how the spacesuits that the humans were wearing didn't give the game away. They were definitely built more chunkier.
Yeah, the big bulky things.
You expected an alien to be under there, didn't you?
I mean, I was just reminded of the movie version of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, the gimp suits at the Vogon.
And
we haven't mentioned a certain blue box.
Oh yes,
this episode. Yes,
when they were inside the big tentacle, the big mechanical machine, you had masses of tentacles plugging into the Enterprise
and all the other ships that were in there, because it was a whole load.
Ship graveyard,
all dead now.
Over the left, as you saw it, over the left hand nacelle was a little wee blue box with a flashing light on top.
Oh, that blue box.
No, just a blue paneled box. Blue box. It's only there very briefly, but...
on this one, I did like the fact that they didn't answer why these humans have become like this.
Yeah.
Gone space mad.
Reavers.
Yeah. It was like, this is who they are, but it leaves the story somewhere else for them to investigate. But that wasn't the story. Yeah. It was like, we're now dealing with this.
They could possibly come back to it. They could possibly not. That might be as far as they take it.
At least that it's explained how they survived that long. They were just cannibalising everyone else.
Yeah. Being predators, basically.
Yeah, the society where they come from degraded that much.
So, we came back. The next episode was...
What is Starfleet?
Yep, that eternal question.
The docudrama.
The docudrama. I thought I liked this one. I think to some extent this was possibly the weakest of the stories. Yes.
Definitely.
Yeah, it was interesting.
And was it deliberately played that you couldn't tell who was doing the interviewing? Because I don't know the voices that well.
Well, it's meant to be the brother of Ortegas.
Beto.
But I noticed visually they gradually sort of showed him. So you'd see him off in the distance.
Because initially he was just the voice asking the question. And you did start to get the feeling he'd come with an agenda.
Yes. Definitely has.
Which we then find out he did come with an agenda.
No indication that at all up to this episode, though.
No, he was all smiley and jolly, happy to see
him. That's the thing. I mean, it seemed like he was recording all the various crew members, sort of saying what they think of Starfleet, but making it completely out of context and in a very negative light.
Oh, yes. He had an agenda, for sure.
Yeah. I have to disagree, because I think it wasn't touched upon heavily. I'll acknowledge that. But there was a couple of verbal sparring between Ortega and Bento right at the beginning when he was introduced.
Oh, really?
There was a little bit of sparring. Not a lot. I will agree with that.
Is that the Q episode he first comes back, isn't it? Where the comedy episode?
I think it was before that, but also he was kept popping up in the Q episode. So.
But as well as the documentary, you've got the Enterprise have been tasked with getting this weapon, organic weapon, from a planet to a battle zone.
They've been asked by a planet that was outside the Federation. Mm-hmm. So they've been asked to mediate, or not necessarily mediate, but helping shipping this weapon.
And it turns out this weapon is organic, shall we say.
Another space whale.
And not very happy about the idea of being turned into a weapon.
No.
It's also sentient. Mm. So it's not just it's as if they were hooking up a horse.
And basically what happens, it destroys a ship, and it turns out that these people that are at war have actually genetically modified it and turned it into a weapon.
They've tweaked it.
And for a mind meld with Scott, Spock, they figure that out, and basically it wants the crew to help it commit suicide, but also protect its children from this happened again, which is what then starts to change Beto's mindset about Starfleet.
Yeah, he sees that it's not exactly black and white, and that they're not...
They're in awkward positions sometimes. Yeah.
Starfleet Command don't come out of this one too well.
No.
Which is not unusual for Star Trek in general. The story beneath it was quite good. It would make a great next gen. So you could see Picard and crew battling with the dilemma of this one.
Yeah.
But actually, in this context, it felt like it was lost to the artifice of the demand they had to make it look like a documentary. It failed for me, I have to say.
You mentioned the Next Generation. I mean, I'm reminded in a rather oblique manner of Encounter at Farpoint.
Right, yes.
They're using an alien creature for their own purposes.
Yes. Similar premise.
It's almost like with the agenda there, it had less sort of impact, didn't it? It was trying to tell you how you should feel about it rather than discussing it and exploring it with the characters.
Yes.
I think that would have slowed it down too much.
Yeah.
Because that's a problem with a lot of next gen. Dramatic pause. Oh, God. Right, let's discuss this. Let's go to the office and sit down and actually discuss this from every angle.
It would have been a character episode.
It runs straight into a brick wall where you had various reactions from Pike, reciting the time where he had to put the horse down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was the emotional content for me. The sitting down and discussing it would have dragged it down.
I don't know. I thought this was a lot of talking heads when it needed something a bit more.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
I possibly agree with you. It, It's not one of the best of the season, I will admit. It's not a terrible episode by a long shot. I didn't think it was.
But it's the
not,
weaker of the season.
It's probably one of the weaker of the group.
Hmm. I must admit, I feel I'm a bit over this particular idea after B5 did it twice.
They did it better,
frankly. Even the second time wasn't that great in B5, but the first time was really quite good.
Yeah, first time. But again, it's not a TV trope. It's not a B5 exclusive. No. It is a TV trope. Yes. I think the first time I saw it was in a MASH episode.
That makes sense,
back in the 70s.
Yeah. And it may predate that.
And Doctor Who did it with the snot monster, didn't it? Was that the Capaldi one?
Oh, that was sort of, although, yeah.
Lesser docking jar, more security cameras.
Sleep. Sleep no more. Yeah, similar sort of thing with lots of shaky cam.
Yeah.
And I must admit, I've never felt queasy before with anything on the TV. But this one, there's a bit, I think, oh, I'm starting to feel a bit unwell with some of this. There's only one particular shot where it was quite egregious, but okay, I've got a big screen, but it's starting to make me think, I'm going to have to look away for a second.
Then we came to one of the more, I thought this was one of the funniest stories of this season.
Ah, yes. Oh, yes.
4.5 Falcons.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Or Spock gets bullied again.
Yeah. So they kind of have a mini episode before the beginning titles run, don't they? They all get turned into Falcons. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then they go and fix the actual issue.
In record time.
Yeah.
This is Pike, Chapel, Uhura and La'am.
And then they come back and then they've decided that they're far more efficient, they don't need their sleep, and they're not going to change back. And then the opening credits roll.
Yeah. I feel in a couple of places, they were overplaying the Vulcan aspect.
Yeah.
Especially Pike and, I forget who it was, they were having a chat, and they were mirroring each other's movements.
I did feel that as well with Pike, and I noticed that in the beginning credits, Pike was saying the space Final Frontier as a Vulcan.
Yeah, he did.
Very flat, monotone.
Yeah.
But I didn't, because I had kept in mind is they're not Vulcan, they're human, but they're operating how they think Vulcans should operate.
Mm. Yeah.
They might have the abilities and the strength and intelligence, but they don't have the Vulcan training and background. Mm. So they're doing what they think should be done.
I mean, I felt at times they were more parodies of Vulcans.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the whole point. They are human. They are doing what they think Vulcans would do.
And how Pike's hair could get on fire.
Just the height on it.
They've got a ruler to it.
Yeah.
And you've got... And goes more to her Romulan side than her
aspect.
Vulcan side. It goes the DNA.
Because of Carnunian scene.
Yeah, it's the genetic upbringing, and also they don't know it at this point in time, but the Vulcan stroke Romulan hybrid.
Bits, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she's obsessed with weapons and upgrading the ship, and then suddenly wants to destroy everyone by starting a three-way war.
Mm-hmm.
So basically wiping out the main protagonists.
It is logical to wipe out the enemy before they wipe you out.
That's true.
That's what I mean, is they're overcompensating. They're over-vulcanizing.
And anyone that doesn't do as she says, she's just going to kill them.
It makes logical sense.
They don't argue anymore.
Yeah.
And then they recruit a real Vulcan, Doug.
Oh, yes.
Doug.
Number one's ex.
The way number one behaves around him. He's like a little kiddie schoolgirl.
Doug's got a brother called Pete. Is that right?
He studied human history.
He is a human file.
Mm. So one of the best bits of this was, I think, the outtake after the credits.
Yeah, like ad-libbed after credits bit, with Ethan Peck's Spock and Doug.
Up but, high.
But all the way
down low, you are too slow.
But all the way through, they refer to themselves as, what is it, three or four Vulcans and a halfling.
Half Vulcan.
Just to rub it in.
The one that's actually a Vulcan getting picked on again, school days.
You notice when they beamed back aboard the ship, Spock is carrying all the equipment.
I hadn't noticed that, actually.
Yeah, although they are almost caricatures of Vulcans, that tendency of Vulcans to look down upon Spock has been throughout the series. So it's a very real trait that they have.
Right, it even went into the
J.J. Abrams.
The Abrams film. Yeah.
Eventually Spock managed to persuade them
almost all of them,
to have the
Get
back.
Regenerative things to be back to non-Vulcan.
Yeah, good thing too, because Uhura forcibly mind-meld someone, doesn't she?
Yes.
Bento.
Well,
yeah.
That's right, yeah.
Her boyfriend.
She calms him down, shall we say.
Yeah.
Well, let's just say their idea of a date is, what is it, eating, was it, Plomex soup and meditating for an hour?
Yeah. I was sort of, I wasn't sure if they were going to discover about his mind-meld, because his hair was covering the top of his ears, and at first I thought she'd injected him.
Yeah.
Then we had Terrarium, which was an Ortegas heavy episode.
Yes.
I really enjoyed this one.
Yes, me too.
Well, when I saw this episode, the plot was lifted straight from the movie Enemy Mine.
Mm. Which was lifted straight from the movie Danger and Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably lift this straight from some other book upon the part time.
It was originally an American and a Japanese warrior during the Second World War.
Yeah, it's an age-old thing, isn't
it? My enemy's enemy is my friend, and we're all buggered, so let's get on with it. So basically, they're doing some exploration. Ortega needs some space away from everyone before she kills them all.
Yeah.
So goes into the shuttle and is quite happy to go and launch buoys, etc. And suddenly a back hole appears that they didn't know about, and she gets swallowed.
Yes. Freak wormhole.
Ends up on the other side.
And oh dear, dead.
Crashes onto a moon.
Notice she's got neighbours, and guess what her neighbour is?
It's a Gorn.
And it's an injured Gorn.
Yep.
But through the use of a jerry rigging the translator and all that kind of stuff.
Just about communicate. I love the setting.
Yeah.
I love the setting of this story, just on the moon, and then you can see, I mean, it looks like a star, doesn't it? But apparently it's a planet out there.
A gas giant
planet out there that kind of looks really cool.
That the actual moon just brushes through the edge of the atmosphere.
Wipes off everything off the face
and
of the
planet.
And I like
the fact that they're looking at the Gorns. It's not just a monster. It's a monster by appearance, but the fact that the Gorn can understand Ortega without the translator.
Because in order to stop her continually threatening him, she chucks some of the, a giant caterpillar that she's called to eat?
Massive centipede.
And oh my God, the moment she bit into it, and it just all that pus came out, like people that eat those great big maggots. I was like,
but it turns out they're both pilots, they're both females.
They have more in common with each other than they realise. I enjoyed this. I enjoyed this a lot. But the only thing that let it down for me slightly was the Metron at the end. That was that hooked it back into Arena. The first time we ever see the Gorn on the original series. I don't think it needed that.
No.
So because basically Uhura lied and bent the truth a little bit and said we could get the Enterprise through this to rescue her. So the Enterprise goes through this wormhole black hole.
Jams the wormhole open.
They find her, and as soon as they land, Anne sees Gorn and fires.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, Ortega had figured out something else was going on because she kept seeing
the flashing light.
And called it out, and it turns out to be this omnipotent being that's been watching them.
Deus Ex Machina.
It's very classic.
I wasn't expecting that part. I did kind of feel we're leading up to the death of the Gorn, though. There was a lot of emotion flying at that point where you finally got them bonding, and maybe this would be
It's the only way it could end, because the Gorn can't go back to Gorn society because it would be killed. And it's not going to be accepted in Starfleet society because
it's a Gorn.
It's a Gorn. So the only outcome was either you leave it there or it ends up being killed off.
Yeah.
In some ways, this is almost... This is a bit like the original one where you've got the Gorn as the enemy and Kirk that was the same here.
Yeah.
It's they've been put into this arena onto this planet by this for observation
to see how they react. It just let it down. It didn't fit to my mind.
Again, they're just trying to weave it in with the original series.
Maybe they were trying too hard.
Yes.
But the ending would have had more impact with the death.
Yes.
The emotion there.
Yeah. I think the nice thing with this is the Metron erases the memory of the conversation with Ortega, but doesn't erase the experience from Ortega, which she's getting so haunted about the Gorn, which is really understandable from her childhood, etc. But to actually then move beyond that because of the relationship with this other surviving, it hopefully it'll let her character develop out rather than just being a victim, basically. Yeah.
It's the most we've ever had from Ortega's, because usually she just flies the ship.
Mm. Yeah. Lights a candle.
Yeah.
And then we got to the Doctor Who rip-off story.
The finale.
New Life and New Civilizations, the finale, which seriously needs to pay a certain Paul Cornell some money for Human Nature rip-off. Oh, this was a Doctor Who homage, and if it wasn't, you were not watching or listening. Well,
again, having said that, there is the line of dialogue from Pellio at the dinner to begin with, that she used to travel with a time travelling doctor.
She got cut off. Yeah.
That blue box mysteriously appearing earlier. Yeah, maybe funny, that was sort of a nod to show you where the series was heading.
Because you've got Pellia with her weird doctor friend.
Yeah.
You've then got Pike's girlfriend, whose name's gone out of my head.
Patel.
Who ends up putting her hands down to the side, and they go, oh, glowy orange.
I was thinking that.
They have energy flying around them.
Yeah.
And then suddenly her and Pike live an entire life together with the door knocking in the background, which was just so Human Nature.
Yeah.
But, and then she regenerates into something else.
It did feel to me like a bit like Rose Tyler in that first season with Christopher Eccleston becoming Bad Wolf, where it was all the glowing and resetting everything.
One of the things that makes me laugh about Pellia is some of the throwaway comments she comes out with.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
It's like when she was talking about LSD. Oh, that time, back in the 60s, back in the 90s.
It didn't have an effect on me then.
And last Thursday.
A bit too much LDS.
Yeah. So, basically, Chapel's boyfriend has gone off.
Corby.
Corby's gone off to find the Fountain of Youth again.
Yeah.
God, what's that? I'd be seriously sitting there going, red flags here. Red flags.
Well, we know that by the original series, What a Little Girl's Made Of.
He ends up on a planet and bumps into a former doctor, medic,
former nurse.
Gamble.
Gamble has managed to, the thing invading, occupying, using Gamble's body has used the buffer codings to create a body, which it then
Transporter.
Yeah, which it sent to
This new planet.
And it's trying to lure Mbenga there.
Yes.
Because it needs another blood DNA entry code.
Yep.
So they eventually they get in. I love the way that this is wonderful. They figure out the only way Mbenga ends up inside, they need to go in and rescue him. And the only way they can open the door without the blood entry code is you need the energy of a sun and the mind meld, or the energy of two TARDISes
two starships
that have to be synchronously flown and synchronously. And the only way you can do this is, hello, would you like a mind meld with me?
Yeah, those ships entwined. It was almost like the mating rituals of some fish was entwining around.
So you end up with Kirk and Spock, each on each starship,
in sync.
Yeah.
As long as he doesn't look what happened on the fourth moon of Orion.
Yes.
Which he does.
Which I love that. I know the cutting, but it was really lovely done, the way they sync that up.
And then fired on the doorway and got it open.
Yeah. Another excuse to get Kirk in there, really, isn't it?
Another excuse. But also, once the door opens, it takes them back to the planet or the prison that we saw through the lens of time.
And this was the episode with the incredibly long flashback from previous episodes at the beginning. And there was bits in there I didn't remember, but I did like the fact that they briefly touched upon Pike ending up in the wheelchair.
Discovery.
So I was really sort of geared up for this episode. Finally!
And for once, this is not a part one of a two-parter.
No.
In fact, the end of it implies there's going to be a bit of a time jump.
Yes.
Which is quite nice.
Potentially starting a 5-year mission to locate planets that have been discovered on a star map.
Mm.
It was a good one, this. It was sentimental. I mean, basically...
writing out Patel, really.
Yeah, Patel. She had to, in order to become the Beholder, which is the prison...
The prison guard, the statue that holds them in. Yeah, in the centre of the prison.
She wanted to have... a nice memory, effectively.
Mm, yes. So she, something to fight for.
Yeah, fight for. So this is where I was saying about the love and, you know, love and nature, whatever it was, human nature.
Human nature,
She actually almost freezes time and lives a life with Pike.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They have a kid, all the way through to her death. And that was quite a sweet little story. Mm. And he remembers it. It wasn't just her side of it, which I thought was quite nice.
To my mind, it actually redefines the imaginary, which was the classic series episode where we met Pike.
Oh, yes.
The rehash, the two-parter.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
Because he didn't want Spock to break the rules and go back to the Talos planet.
Mm-hmm.
We now have a reason why, because he has these full set of memories he doesn't need.
Okay. Yes. I'm also reminded of a Next Generation episode where Picard gets zapped by an alien race.
The flute.
The inner light.
That's the inner light, yes.
That's it. There's one wonderful meme I've seen on Facebook, which has Pike, and I had these visions of our life in front of me with marriage and happiness and family and Picard. Oh, yeah, I was given this vision of a whole happy life with children, grandchildren, and I learned new skills. And then there's O'Brien, who only had a vision of 30 years in prison, where he killed people. Really? Yeah, and O'Brien is just sitting there in the corner.
I'd say the AG effects are better nowadays than they were back in Next Gen.
Oh, yeah.
You knew that was where we're heading, and I was going to be very critical, like zooming in. Yeah. But yeah, they were very well done.
They were.
I have to say, when me and Fake Keith sat down to watch this, she didn't talk to me for the rest of the evening.
Really?
Was it your fault?
Yeah.
It's always my fault.
She did that when Clara got ravened. She ignored us all for hours.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I have to say, personally, no, I didn't think of regeneration. That didn't go through.
I just thought, when you're doing the effect, I thought, okay, I see what they're referencing.
That didn't. What I thought was Gary Mitchell, because the eyes first.
Oh, yes,
went.
Yes.
Mm. Okay.
That is my first thoughts.
Oh, okay.
Where no man has gone before.
Yeah, yeah.
Because her eyes got all blue and purpley. Yes. Yeah,
her eyes went starfield.
It was like a little galaxy.
Whereas Lieutenant Mitchell just had the silver eyes.
Yeah, at first I thought, are they trying to make it look like he's got Gorn eyes? Mm. You know, how the original Gorn and those really...
Fly eyes.
Compound eyes.
Silvery. Thank you, that's the word I'm looking for, compound. The regeneration only twigged on the second watch. Didn't twig on the first watch.
Yeah.
As far as Patel's death goes, we didn't have to watch it, did we?
She isn't really dead.
No, as a statue, She's gone in the blink.
She hasn't regenerated. She has taken the form of the Beholder, who looks after the bad guys.
I don't think she has taken on the form. She always was.
She goes back to this effect before calls. Yeah.
Exactly.
This season ends with Pike almost grieving with a glass of whiskey. I'm assuming that's what that is.
Pike and Number One.
Yeah.
Sitting there reminiscing of being very quiet.
You could hear the guitar, the acoustic guitar coming in, couldn't you?
And what is it? Is this a hit it moment?
Yes.
As fast as you like. But all in all, I thought it was a really good season. I enjoyed it.
Thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah. I don't have any episodes that I didn't like.
I had one, but it's not bad.
They were all eminent. Some are better. Yes. Some are better than others. Yeah. I'm not denying that, but they're all eminently watchable.
I still have to go back and watch episodes 3 and 4 because I just wanted to do the last 6 for the podcast. So one of them is the zombie episode.
Yes,
good. Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
That's 3, I think.
Yeah,
and then 4 is my favourite of the season. I think.
Oh, okay.
Space adventure hour.
Oh, yes.
There are 2 outright comedies. In this season.
Yeah.
And for me, that's the better of the two.
Okay.
It's a little bit of a Mickey take of a famous TV program.
Even the Vulcan episode was very comedic, wasn't
it?
I thoroughly enjoyed this season. Would recommend it to anyone.
Mm, absolutely.
And they mentioned another 5-year mission at the end, didn't they? But we now now that they've only got series 4 and 5?
There's a full series 4 and a truncated series 5.
But of course, at some point, Pike gets
wheelchaired.
Yes. That's after he leaves the
He's been promoted to... Again, I like the continuity. In Menagerie, it was a buffle plate on a J-class freighter, which is mentioned in the flash-forward sequence. Yeah.
We see it in Discovery.
Yeah, because myself and Faye Crumbly, we watched her the cage and I started watching her Menagerie as well.
So. Yeah, so I'm presuming the truncated final fifth season will be more about getting Kirk into the chair, I imagine.
Handover.
Yeah.
As he's there every other week anyway.
They won't take
what
too
the
much
hell time. Are you doing on my ship?
Why don't you just take over? Well, thank you very much. I will do. Yeah.
But you were saying, Gene, how it established sort of Kirk and Spock's relationship at the end.
Yeah, the rapport.
Because of the mind meld.
This more or less establishes Spock and Kirk's relationship, very close relationship.
I thought that had actually already happened. There was last season, they had a really good moment together, scene.
This one really kind of
I think that was quite literally the first meeting where Uhura introduced them.
I could believe.
And we had a nice handshake and they sat down and then the camera pulled out as they were discussing things.
I found that more effective than this mind meld. I thought that was, it's good, but I thought that was heavier handed than that little scene. But
It was fairly heavy. They stated at the end, didn't they? We're going to be friends.
Yeah,
hammering home the point. Yeah.
It is a little bit.
Just in case you didn't notice it. So, listeners, tell us what you thought of season 3 of Strange New Worlds. You can email us at show@staggeringstories.net. Woohoo!
Right, ladies and gentlemen, after that delicious cake, we have also been watching even more stuff.
We have.
A little bit older than the current series of Strange New Worlds.
Yes, yes, yes. Far back from the mists of time.
Yes.
Well, 2005.
And just after its 20th anniversary.
Yes, exactly. Just over 20 years ago.
Yep. We have been watching Doctor Who Father's Day. Pause for music. Not that music.
That was quite
not that music. Other music.
It's a Moomin.
It isn't Father's Day.
No.
Anywhere, I don't think.
Not in November. No.
Not at the moment. But yes, this was unusual for the time, as in it was quite an emotional Doctor Who.
Arguably the first full-on emotional Doctor Who ever.
It kind of blends it with the comedy, particularly with Jackie.
And it
cleverly explores Rose's father as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's the first time we actually have... He's haunted the series. We know he's dead.
Yeah, and it's the first time they play with changing time, I think, isn't it?
It's the first time we see the Reapers, and only time.
Only time so far.
They're due a comeback.
Yeah.
They've changed it a lot and reset the universe.
It's very much an episode of be careful what you wish for.
And also how, to a certain extent, legends and how memory cheats and how legends can be built up over about someone.
Yes, particularly someone who's dead.
Yeah, someone who isn't there, who can't tell the truth of the subject.
Yes, they're obviously fondly remembered.
Yeah.
But you do get a skewed view of them, potentially.
Yes.
I've only seen this once before. I literally have seen this when it was aired.
Really?
You haven't seen it in 20 years.
And
May 20.
Maybe once more since. I tend to watch the classics more. Yeah. There's some of the new Who that I've watched more regularly. And I remember when this one came out, not particularly liking it.
Oh, really? Okay.
I don't know. There was something that jarred about it and it didn't make sense and that kind of stuff. But I enjoyed it much, much more this time around.
I think on the first viewing, I thought it was a bit mediocre because I was aware, because I was spoilt with this first series, that I was aware they were going to be back in the Second World War and there was all this big dramatic build-up to the finale. So I felt a bit like that too. I think going back, though, I still felt the emotion on the first episode, particularly towards the end. where Pete realises that Rose is his daughter. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he knows what he's got to do, because it's fairly obvious to us, because we know Doctor Who and time travel. It's fairly obvious all the way through that we know that this has got to be fixed.
Yeah.
It was quite well done. And seeing people like Mickey as a child.
Not played by Noel Clarke.
No. I thought that was quite good.
Imprinting on people. Mm,
yes.
And it was nice to go back in time, but not too far, somewhere relatable.
Yeah. Someone
87.
Vague memories of 1987. Mm-hmm.
For me, it was the best episode of this season until the Doctor dances Empty Child, which is the very next episode.
Well, yeah. Okay.
It was the best. It was the best one so far.
It's very strong. Yeah. I don't know if I'd go for best, but very certainly very strong.
Well, as I said, up until that point, it was for me, it was the best one.
This is Cornell's first TV Doctor Who.
Yeah, I think now looking back at sort of the recent sort of couple of series we've had, I think I prefer my Doctor Who more like Father's Day, a bit more contained, a bit more Earth-based. I'd like to go back to that. Mm.
Well, RTD in his first era was kitchen soap opera sort of showrunner, wasn't
he? He was grounding it. There was always...
The first season was very much classic Who with a modern spin.
Yeah. But more domestic, yes.
Yeah, as in it was, as you say, contemporary, Earth-based. Started to bring in the, we're not just kidnapping the companions. Oh, look, they have a family left behind, etc. They were closer to original Who stories than they are now.
Yeah.
Don't know. I think this is very atypical for classic Who. Classic Who didn't tend to do much in the way of time manipulation.
Oh, no.
So it didn't do anything domestic.
Yeah.
I mean, the setting of it being contemporary on Earth, not mucking about with Mavity and all that other kind of stuff. Yeah. Not timey-wimey, other than within the context of the story. It's much more like the Who was as it was starting to become in the McCoy era.
Mm. And I like the way that, for me, it feels like this episode has aged quite well, because there's always things in our RTD's episodes that are very modern at the time, but this was already sort of set back in 87, so there's not that chance for it to happen.
It was also always a technically a period piece. Mm.
Yes, talking of technical, there's a great big mobile phone isn't there?
And Jackie's hair.
I do like the fact with this one that if the TARDIS had been there, you know the Doctor would have just gone. It wasn't calling Rose's bluff or anything. It's, I don't need this.
I don't think he could have done that, could he? Given the state of the world at that point, I don't know what he would have done.
Well, he didn't know the world was happening at that point until he was starting to get to his TARDIS, open the door, and there was no TARDIS there.
That was quite nice. I wasn't expecting.
If he'd opened the door, the TARDIS was there, and the thingies weren't starting to eat the planet, he'd would have gone if that hadn't all kicked in.
But see, though, would he have left the situation as it was, with Rose being out of time and her father still being alive?
I get the feeling...
Maybe.
At that point, he would have.
Maybe.
He is damaged at that point, isn't he?
That's true, yeah. And, of course, what we didn't know back at the time is that the reason he was written out the way he was because Christopher Eccleston had to go off for his father's funeral. His father had died during this episode.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. So it wasn't touched upon at all at the time. Yeah. Not in Confidential or anything like that, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But he has now spoken about it. So, yeah, it was a tough time for him. But
in retrospect, it certainly comes through on the way he acted, I think. Maybe. Certainly it's more of the stormy expressions.
Yeah.
He's much more angrier in this. The story gives him reason to be
exactly,
angry.
Exactly, yeah.
But,
yeah.
He, you know...
It works for the story,
yeah,
certainly.
Yeah, I think...
It's not like some Pertwee's where he's Pertwee just in a bad mood for no good reason.
Yeah. I don't want to put it light on the fact that he's lost his parents, but he taps into that. You can tell.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
It also, I think he really got across that feeling of slight betrayal. That he questioned, is the only reason then because you wanted to go back in time and sort this out? Is that the only reason you want to be?
He thought that was a real friendship, didn't he?
Yeah. I think he felt, you could sense the Doctor felt betrayed by Rose doing this, actually physically intervening.
Yeah, because occasionally the Ninth Doctor could be quite rude about humanity, couldn't he?
Oh, yes.
Stupid apes and things.
Yeah.
Talking of his portrayal, I do remember, because we saw this relatively recently at the BFI, didn't we, with that the showing this episode. Yeah. And I do remember the line, "Don't touch the baby." And everyone thought that was hysterical. Yeah. So, yeah. So, no, I think it grew on me more. I didn't think it was bad at the time. I just thought, you know, it's probably a bit mediocre because I could see how the plot was going to play out.
Mm.
But I definitely feel stronger for it now.
So, having said that, I know one thing that always triggers fake Keith, and I've got to admit, does bring a moistness to my eye, is when Pete turns around and says, "Right, who am I, love?
Yeah.
You're my daddy."
Yeah. And she lies, doesn't she? She tells him all about her life with him and what she's going to tell
about him. Yeah, takes that apart. She's doing what her mum's doing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Her mum's telling her this story that he was a brilliant guy and he was doing this and that, even though in the church they're like on the verge of divorce.
Yeah.
And Rose Jackie thinks he's having it off with every bit of skirt in the neighbourhood.
Including his daughter.
She just wants to build up a rosy image of her.
Yeah.
So you've got Jackie's building this image for so it doesn't hurt Rose. Yeah. And Rose then does exactly the same for her dad.
Question I have to ask.
Yes.
Are the Reapers in any way related to Big Finish's Vortisaurs?
It does feel like they're a similar idea.
Because they were roughly around about the same time, I think. The Big Finish.
That would have been 2000, 2001-ish, wouldn't
it? Yeah, so a few years before.
But yeah, I've never made that connection. No, very similar, aren't they?
It's what I thought.
Would have been nice if they'd just seen Charlie and the Eighth Doctor ride past on one, wouldn't it?
And I've got to think, also, God, what was the Pond's last one?
Manhattan.
Angels Take Manhattan. Did this situation reoccur in the time loop, the ended time loop that we saw in there?
Yeah.
Because I've always thought that if time sort of loops back on itself and crimps and you have this, do they come in and sterilise everything and then time would continue with the same people as it should do?
We just didn't see it, maybe. I don't know.
We saw what was happening inside the time loop in Father's Day. We saw what happens outside the time loop in Angels Take Manhattan.
So as Amy and Rory are plunging to their death, one of these Reapers comes in and eats them up.
No. The Reaper materialises underneath them with its mouth open.
So we've had Daleks and Cybermen, so who would win out of Reapers and Angels?
That's difficult to say. You know,
I want to say the Reapers.
Well, they'd be trying to chomp on the Stone Angel, wouldn't they? Suggestion.
Yeah.
Maybe all in one gulp.
Yeah, that's it.
I did quite like the effect, the animation of them, the way they huddle around.
And the glow.
The glow.
They weren't bats, they weren't dragons, but they had elements of both in some respect. Yeah.
Big and nasty with horrible pinky teeth.
And I hadn't appreciated the first time around, but watching it this time around, when all the kids disappear from the playground, Mickey was the only one that didn't get disappeared.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Now, is it because he's a fixed point?
The elements of time, Artron energy up and down his timeline.
Yeah.
I don't know, yeah. He ran away, but...
Yeah.
But it's nice that he's there, because you don't quite realise that he's in that episode at first till someone mentions his name, and then you realise all your main characters from the series that you've met so far are in that episode somewhere.
Yes, in one way, yeah. I hadn't realised he was that much older than Rose.
No.
He must be, what, 4 or 5? I don't know how old he's meant to be. But...
Yeah,
he comes across as so much younger when he grows up.
So, an interesting idea. Why does the Doctor give Rose another chance? I don't know. Feels like he needs to, but...
I think it was more... This one is damaged.
Mm-hmm.
He needed to impress her.
Maybe.
To a certain extent, I think that's why he pushed the rules as much as he did.
Which is probably why he feels so betrayed afterwards,
isn't it?
Because he says this is it. This is, we only get a second go at this.
Yeah, can't do this. Can't
come
back here again.
Can't do this again.
But presumably he had all the time in the world between trying a second time to tell her, you absolutely cannot run in front of ourselves. You cannot go to him until we are gone that first time. Really impressed upon her, but he clearly didn't.
Well, we don't know. He might have done, and she still did it.
It to my mind, on her part, it wasn't planned. It was a spur of the moment thing.
Yeah, but that implies, didn't think. To me, the doctor really didn't give her enough priming.
Yeah.
Really got to keep control. He really got to not do that.
Grab her, tackle her to the ground.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
I do like, just before they vanished, the look on the doctor's face as Rose ran in front of them. The second, what the?
I do remember on transmission that it had impact for me because it was just, oh my God, they've just fizzled out of existence.
Yeah. Gone. It was it was a mixture between astonishment and rage.
That's the point where the time loop started and they were thrown out. So that's where I think if the things wouldn't have happened and he wouldn't have survived, that's where they would have continued from.
Yes, could be. So they weren't disintegrated, they were just ejected, and then when this version does get out of the loop, do they merge? I don't know.
It was definitely a nice way to introduce the new generation of Doctor Who fans just joining the show with this series of time travel and things. It was a good way to explore it. Just a sort of a mum and dad relationship.
Nice old farts shouting at the screen, Belenovich limitation effect.
Just get in the car and kill yourself. It's the only way.
The whole world is very strange at that point because you have that car still going around.
Looping around.
It's a very damaged universe at that point.
Yes, that's what I think the point is. It's what let the Reapers stroke Vortasaurs in.
Yeah, the Reaper Saws.
The Reaper Saws, yes.
Well, in fact, it opens with a really creepy-looking photo of Pete. Implying what he's going to be the villain of the piece.
Even comes with its own sting, doesn't it? Yeah. As it goes in.
But then he turns out to actually be a really good guy. And
A bumbler, a bit of.
Well, he's more of a Dillboy character.
Yeah. Probably they shouldn't have brought him back, frankly. I know. He obviously, it was a very popular episode. He's a very popular character.
Yeah.
Oh, let's bring him back for an alternative reality. A bit marvellous, shouldn't he? This one day, isn't it?
Again, this is where you and I disagree. I think there was more of a background planning by RT.
You think I
think that was always the plan. It was for wrapping up Rose's story.
Okay, maybe. I don't know. They didn't do a very good job raising him up. He looked much the same. 20-odd years later.
Some people reach an age and then 15. Just seem to stop.
Yeah.
But also, you've got to remember, the alternative version is a multimillionaire, so it can afford...
And he had his Vitex.
Yeah, he could afford all his lotions and potions and maybe the odd facelift and that kind of stuff and his tonics. But you also get some people, both men and women, their face reaches a certain age and stays there for decades and then suddenly almost crumbles overnight.
It's actually true of Jackie, apparently. She looked exactly the same back in 1987 as she did in 2005.
The hair was different.
Funny, the hair.
Old beyond her years in 1987. That didn't change by the time she got to 20 years.
She hasn't changed now, has she?
Not much.
But yeah, no, that thing where the doctor tells her to shut up and go away, effectively, I should have done this ages ago.
Yes. Yeah, they had some nice moments there playing with that relationship, didn't they?
Yeah, payback for the slap in the previous episodes.
And I also loved the ordinary life speech. To the married couple.
Yes. You can never have a life like that.
Yeah.
And then at the end, time was changed, even though it was in this pocket universe at that point.
It was tweaked.
Yeah, so Rose was actually there.
So he didn't die alone on another road. He died outside the church with a blonde.
But the story changes, but the ending always remains the same.
Mm-hmm.
You're allowed to get rid of that as long as the result.
Yeah,
it can be seen to be the same.
Time will rework itself.
Yeah,
you can move it 20 feet to the left, but it's still got to happen.
Yeah.
And then they nicely just sort of walk into the distance, don't they?
Do they? Yeah.
If you haven't seen this since it aired, if you're like me, caught up on some of them but not done a rewatch, I think it is worth watching. And I think because you then see the story that plays out, that also feeds into how you're watching it, because you know what's happening to characters.
Yes.
Which changes it slightly from when you first see it, where you obviously don't know what's going to happen in the future, because you know, you're not the showrunner or director or whatever the heck they call it these days.
A strong episode from a very strong season.
Oh, yes, definitely.
We haven't said hello to someone.
No.
One. He's glaring down at us.
Oh, yes.
Under his hat.
Yes. Yeah. After three.
One.
Two.
Three.
Hello, head of Pertwee!
Plus hat.
Inky McSquirtalot handles.
Inky, Dinky and Winky McSquirtalot.
Very various Sandy. Nebulas. Nazi Spark. The Ashes of Grunhilde. Oh. And Goats.
Terence. And, of course, Dave Zilla.
Oh, yes.
The Mighty.
Not Dave Zilla. The Mighty.
Do we have any letters?
No feedback this time, I'm afraid.
Mm. Oh, it must be excellent.
Sans feedback?
Indeed.
Dear listener, do you not love us anymore?
Yes, tangible, frankly.
Yes, we know there's no who to write into us about, but, you know, come on.
Yeah, please.
Even if it's just say, hello, so we know we're not shouting into the void.
Is I often shout out into the void.
Yeah, actually, it's the void's the only thing that listens.
Yeah.
Well, if we have no feedback.
That is it.
Mm. And so, dear listeners, that brings us to the end of another podcast.
Well, they got seven episodes worth of reviews in one there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, blimey, yeah. But never fear, in the next one, there'll be more of the same, more fun, frivolity and jollity, more news and reviews, more who old and new. So until that...
F for Father's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Not F in Father's Day.
Father's Day. F off.
Flagellating.
Fornicating.
Flippantly.
Flummoxing.
Farting.
Flubberly.
Forward.
Forward. Yep. Fumbling.
Fairly.
Fastly. Towards us. This is me, Crumbly, saying, be seeing you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Au revoir.
To announce that there must be no criticism of the president, or that we are to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but morally treasonable to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt.
You have been listening to the Staggering Stories podcast, Series 1, number 481, featuring Adam J. Purcell, Andy Simpkins, Gene Riddler, Keith Dunn and Scott Fuller. The views expressed here are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the other speakers or the site. No copyright infringement is intended, and this is an El Presidente production for www.staggeringstories.net.
No, it's not. We're not recording it. We haven't done any sound checks or anything at this stage.
Checklist begins.
Yes. Well, my microphone was on, so...
Yeah, but it weren't actually.
No.
But that button hadn't been pressed.
Nah.
The engage button.
Dissects Shatner's acting.
No. Oh, brilliant.
I imagine he has a lot to say about
it. It's interesting what he does have to say. You know, he's
okay.
Yeah, not quite the bad, overwrought buffoon that he... There are measured reasons for various things.
It was a different age, to be fair.
It was a different
1960s,
age. As you said,
acting has changed.
The pause for Picard is the fact that he's searching for the next word, where the pause for Shatner is the brain is working too fast for the mouth to keep up.
Do our sound check.
Yavel, main capitaine.
Recording?
Hello, hello, this is me. Is that you? I'm there. Are you here? Well, if you come over here, you can see me there. Please say something that I'm recording. Am I recording?
Yeah, I'm recording.
Good.
Okay, right.
I'm waiting for an acknowledgement that, yep, you're fine.
I see where you're going with it.
How am I sounding? Am I okay?
Yeah, you're looking good.
Excellent.
Yesterday upon the stair, I met a man who wasn't there.
Hello.
He wasn't there again today. I wish that man would go away.
Yep, you're looking good.
It's a competition, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
So he passes out first.
Yeah, or just cracks.
Adam, we cracked years ago.
Yeah, true.
Good grief. Yeah, red alert. Yeah.
Shoot to kill, shoot to kill, shoot to kill.
Yep.
Yeah. That's very good.
Yeah, we could have fed that in live.
That's my Star Trek role-playing days.
The first one is the one where Starfleet wipe out 6,000 humans. Sounds like a Friends title. Should we do that for all of them?
Yeah.
The one where everyone becomes Vulcan.
Oh, yes. We've all been watching television. Excuse me.
No! I will not excuse you!
The Kirk cough.
Oh, I love this science bitch. More than half of our neighbours believe the entire cosmos was created 6,000 years ago. This is, incidentally, about 1,000 years after the Sumerians invented glue.
Okay.
Sorry, that's my fault.
I'll
have that. There you go.
Oh, bless you.
I'm hanging upside down.
It's fine, it's just rolled around a bit. It's
all over the place.
Happy birthday, everyone.
Oh, happy birthday.
May have your time.
Well, that's 6 episodes down.